Thank you very much, Mr. President. I am a development economist. I live in Turkey, but work on Asian economies in the last 25 years, particularly on Japan and South Korea, and recently shifting to China. But I am also coming from a country who wants to become a full member of European Union. So I would like to look at both Asia and Europe from that perspective. I believe rather than talking about an individual country and problem of individual countries or regions, we should focus on more broader problems because I don't believe that current problems are unique to Europe anymore. Look at Japan, similar budget deficit problem is quite urgent. Aging problem is also over there. Since the burst of the bubble economy at the early 1990s, there is almost no growth in Japan. And you know Japan with her political stability since the early 1950s. But in the last one decade, there is no political stability at all. So almost all kind of problems which we were talking about Europe are valid for Japan as well. Maybe Russia is not far away from those kind of similar problems. So we have not a set of problems unique to a certain region of our country. We have a civilizational crisis now. And so then we should focus on sustainable growth to maybe more on sustainable humanity, sustainable future. Therefore, we should broaden our realm of emphasis. The central message of my paper is that do not be afraid of crisis, but put emphasis on the quality of your response, because there is crisis almost every time in our history. So, but crises are changing the course of history, so we need to increase the quality of our response. Let me start with the early 1970s, because it is quite important in understanding what is happening today. As of 1970s, the post Second World War development gap was closed. Physically speaking, development achieved its major targets in terms of growth, employment creation, rise in per capita GDP, etc., etc. Therefore, the return on capital started decreasing as of 1970s, and this was the first message that we should invest something else to get much higher return on our capital investment. Also, there was the side effect of developmentalist Keynesian model at that time. Excessive interventions resulted in also chronic capitalism and widespread inefficiencies across the economies. Also at that time, the collapse of gold standard and the end of Bretton Woods system created another important signal that an era is going to end as of 1970s. And also oil crisis and stagflation, long-term stagnation and inflation coincided at the same era. And finally, another problem was the significant convergence between the leading industrial countries and follower countries such as Japan. They converged to each other significantly. So all those lists signaled that something is coming. And the entire decade is named a lost decade. There was a reaction to that. What was the response? Rather than that crisis, I am interested with the type of reaction that we have given at that time. The reaction was the evolution of Keynesian developmentalist model, but the adoption of a neoliberal order at that time, which means governance, many of the governance structures and institutional foundations of market were under attack at that time. And after that, trade and finance liberalization came, which is good news. But the implication is that for the first time in human history, maybe, in that regard, finance and capital separated from the national interest because borders are opened. So a physical return on physical capital in industrialized countries decreased dramatically. Therefore, finance capital has got freedom to move wherever it likes to get higher profit. Therefore, across the borders, movement of capital started, and the gap between real economy and finance capital widened, so that this the volume of real economy failed to match the monetary volume of the economy. Also, at the early stage of 1980s, there were continuous reform, corporate reform as well. The major theme of corporate reforms at the start of 1980s was that the emphasis shifted from stakeholder to shareholder value maximization, meaning that primary objective of any corporation is not to take care of social responsibilities, stakeholders, but to provide maximum return for their shareholders. While you are offering a lower share profit to your shareholders, if you pay attention to environment, it will be unrealistic, it will be illogical. So forget about, implicitly speaking, forget about environment, other objective social criteria, but try to maximize shareholder profit. And this was legitimized by corporate reforms, mainly in the United States. And also, as a result of this new perspective, we witnessed the rise of virtual finance and bubble economy through financial innovations. And of course, the real estate bubbles fastened. The first chain was cut in Japan at the early 1990s. Maybe you remember at that time, almost all Western economists were criticizing Japan for that the rise of that bubble economy. They blamed Japan that because you did not implemented neoliberal reforms properly at the right time, at the right sequence. As a result of that, under the impact of old model, now you are experiencing a bubble economy problem. But what happened later? In 1997, gigantic Japanese investment bank Yamaichi Securities collapsed. And after 10 years, then Lehman and Brothers in the United States with the same mentality, with the same logic, with the same mechanism collapsed as well. Therefore, the problem was not related with whether Japan implemented neoliberal reforms or not. The problem were related with the basic dynamics of the model since the early 1980s. So let me not repeat everything, but as of today, what I'm underlining is that, what is message is that our reaction to the crisis around 1970s was not proper response. That response was not sustainable response, and the result is this one. After almost 25 years, we have global warming problem, environmental degradation, food and commodity shortages, aging, erosion of family, excessive of selfishness and atomization of individual, lack of hope and motivation in young generations, the rise of racism almost everywhere, particularly in Europe. Joblessness, unemployment, global unemployment problem cannot be sustained. It is not unique to Turkey or Europe or Latvia. There is a global unemployment problem. Of course, we expect that inevitably there will be a protectionist waves, which is quite dangerous because it means that collapse of finance and trade system. But unfortunately, there are initial signs of such protectionism. Of course, lack of leadership and governance crisis were mentioned by many scholars now. And Cold War global institutions do not work at all today, and they are under the problem of legitimacy. They are not legitimate at all because those Cold War institutions based upon the love of winners in the Second World War. We need more inclusive, more fair global institutions. We need a global reforming in United Nations, in other security institutions, much more fair representation in World Bank, IMF. So we need to reform global institutions in order to find a solution to our global problems. Okay, what kind of reaction that we should give after this stage? If it is obvious that we are passing through a serious crisis, then we should focus on the nature of our response from now on. I will mention three dimensions of our reaction that can be sustained in the future. Please remember what happened in the history of modern economic growth. Since the first industrial revolution, there were almost five major waves. Let us call them contradictory waves. The first major wave is industrial revolution. At each major waves, there is one sector, at least one important rising strategic sector, which would determine the fate of nations after that. And there is also one critical input of that sector, which will decisive impact on the rest of the development process. During the first industrial revolution, that strategic industry was the mass production of textile, but the critical input was, of course, cotton, and the world divided and adjusted accordingly. During second industrial revolution, the steam engine, railroads became the critical factors, and coal mines became the critical import at that time. During the third waves of change, electricity, steel, and iron became critical sectors and determined the rest of the time. During the fourth waves of change, which start at around 1940 until 1990s dominantly, automobile became the critical sector. Also, mass production of synthetic industrial intermediate inputs became also quite critical. Regarding both automobile industry and synthetic production of intermediate inputs, oil became critical input. So the Cold War environment designed accordingly again. And the last wave of change came as of 1990s, which is I would prefer to call the age of nano, which implies speed, revolution, communication, and transportation. Nano engineering, semiconductors were the critical inputs for that age. So now another major wave is coming. What would be the critical strategic sectors of the sixth wave? And what would be the critical inputs of those sectors? So I'm just making exercise, intellectual exercise. We should together think about that. It seems that energy, environment, health, biotechnologies, food, nano revolution, and information technologies will change the course of history again. So critical sectors are these. And critical inputs for those sectors will trigger further negotiation or clash of civilizations. So, for instance, think about what China is doing in entire African continent for the last decade. Almost major mining industries were strategically controlled by China in order to sustain Chinese growing gigantic economy by controlling those critical inputs. So on the one hand, we have to focus on critical industries. On the other hand, we have to focus on critical inputs, how they can be sustained and survived, how they can be negotiated and divided fairly among the nations. But also there are some regional or individual-based factors. For instance, regarding Turkey, these are Turkey's now advantages. Maybe similar advantages could be found by other countries as well. The growth dynamics in Turkey is quite strong. Turkey is a really growth-oriented country. Since the post-global crisis, Turkey is growing at around 9% for the last 2 years, okay? Because Turkey's demographic structure is very, very young. Medium age in Turkey is 29, which means quite a younger country. And Turkey's geostrategic strategic position is also because the world is now divided into two, production-oriented centers, consumption-oriented centers. Asia has become the center of production, but still West is the center of consumption. This is triggering a great volume of trade and movement of finance. Therefore, Turkey is at a juncture where combining these two separate worlds. In that regard, Turkey's geostrategic position is getting significant, of course. Also, Turkey is surrounded by key resources. Most of the oil and natural gas is taking place around neighborhood countries, which puts Turkey into an energy corridor position, which is a good news for both producers and consumers of major energies. If we can establish a peace-oriented region, Turkey will become a critical bridge for the producer of supplier of oil and gas and consumer of those critical inputs. Also, Turkey is important because of her proximity to the major emerging markets in emerging Africa, in emerging Asia. So in that regard, also Russia is a dynamic and future-oriented market. And of course, still knowledge will be important. But the message is that, okay, Turkey, for the time being, as of today, has such characteristics, positive characteristics, but we are on the same ship. If ship is, does not move, your individual efforts would not produce any concrete result. You are on the same ship, you can go nowhere, no man's land. Therefore, Turkey cannot sustain these positive characteristics if Europe continue in such a stagnation position, if Russia cannot enrich, widen her sectoral basis. Therefore, rather than talking about the advantages of individual countries, we have to think in terms of global paradigm. Then we have to come to that big picture, of, which I call facing the iceberg. Since the global crisis of 2009, there were some measures which are directly targeting macroeconomic results, which takes at the top of the hill, but there is no major reforms in international economic architecture since then. So still in the old bottle, we have old wine. Nothing has changed significantly. We should target the basis of culture, mentality, globally speaking. We should target system and structural parameters of the global world rather than focusing only at the top of the hill. And also we have to carry out microeconomic reforms pertaining labor markets, pertaining social security system, pertaining other aspects of microeconomic industry. However, the most important point is to focus on culture, mentality, and structural characteristics of the current system. Okay, therefore, problems are global, solutions must be global also, but we should go beyond material reactions, such as motivating growth. Almost all focus is on paying debt, improving fiscal situation, and stimulating growth. But these are really a short-term oriented reactions. We need much longer and deeper reactions, and therefore we should go beyond the current fundamentals. Our premises and postulates has to be questioned. That is why I called three elements of new model, a new trinity of human being is freedom, market economy, and morality. When I say morality, I do not imply any particular culture, structure, religion, etc. When I imply morality, I imply what Amartya Sen once implied when he write a book on economics and ethics. The term morality implies that we have to institutionalize, we have to endogenize moral values of humanity into economic theory. You know, theoretically speaking, current economic architecture do not reject ethical values, moral values, but it says that I am not interested with those things. But I argue that we have to take them into account and put them into our economic models from now on. Okay, I am about to finish. Okay, now we have to therefore reform and change the entire system. We have to understand that reverse engineering or reproduction of the status quo is not realistic at all. We need a new motivation scheme. We are not motivated. People in Europe are not motivated at all. In Turkey, in Russia, are not motivated at all. In order to motivate people, we need a legitimacy framework for them with different mode of distribution, participation, transparency, accountability, responsibility, and regulation of the state mechanism. So these are necessary subtitles of providing legitimacy. Therefore, after providing legitimacy, we can have a new social contract. We cannot deceive people by changing the current game, basic elements of the game. We need a social contract not only in Europe but also in the world. Then we will be able to achieve finally political stability through the establishment of such a good governance structure. Thank you very much.